weeks, and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Jay Hersko. Joining with me once again, we have a repeat guest, Ivor Jacobson, joining us from Costa del Sol, Spain. Am I correct?
Yes, from Costa del Sol, Puerto Banús.
Beautiful, beautiful. Much nicer than the weather we're probably having here in the States. So the question you're all asking is, why is Ivor back? Well, Ivor's done a lot of writing lately, which I want to unpack some of the crazy things that he's seen. We're going to talk about the methods prison, and we're going to lead into his product essence, which I think all of you listeners and all of you watching this video will be quite interested in. So Ivor, I'm going to start with the basic background question. You were the father of RUP. You were considered to be the father of UML. You were the father of use cases. Why didn't you just do Agile RUP?
Actually, we did. There are two aspects of it, or two answers. Number one, we actually did. And we were quite successful. We created something called Essential Unified Process. And we had clients, we were successful in driving it and pushing it, but, and that's the second, it didn't feel right. Once again, getting into creating a method and have all the crazy things that we'll talk about later, wasn't right. I didn't once again want to be a guru and market one and the only one of the way of doing it. So instead, I started what became Essence, and that is around 2004.
Okay, so You just provided a perfect segue. So let's talk about the crazy things. I read your article on LinkedIn. For those listeners, I will have it in the show notes. Let's talk about some of the crazy things you've seen with methods and frameworks. Because when I read it again this morning right before we started recording, and it really was resonant. And it kind of makes you feel icky in a way that you're pointing out the kind of uncomfortable thing that we all see but don't want to acknowledge. Can we talk about that for a bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is one of my favorite topics right now. So it fits very timely.
Okay.
So basically, I'm a little bit conservative when it comes to wording. I have worked with formal languages, formal methods, using formal techniques, and I mean mathematics. I'm not talking about just precise. So I respect wording quite a lot. So when I then start to use something like crazy things, it really must be crazy, and I must be frustrated. These are things I discovered 15, 20 years ago. And I thought it was crazy at that time, and I think it's even more crazy that we don't do anything about it. Mm. Well, we do, but generally in the world, we accept them. And that is the methods war, that we fight with one another about which method is the best. We go into a method world, and we learn then one method, and then we basically belong to a sect. It's not a normal marketing fight where we have different products. It's more like a religious fight because you cannot prove anything really. And it's very much hand waving. This is the reason, this is good, and so on. We cannot really compare methods. So these great guys who create different methods, the top of the cream of software engineering experts, they have to do a lot of marketing. So the success of a method or a framework is based on marketing, primarily. And but it's not marketing like selling a product. It's marketing that is more like a priest or
creating converts. Sect. Yep, creating disciples.
And you belong to one of these. I mean, most people, if they are in this space, they belong to one of these sects. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to learn two different methods because they use different terminology, different vocabulary. They have a different way of describing the method. Everything they put into their method has to be redescribed because otherwise it doesn't fit in the method. And that means that the original author of a practice, whether it is Scrum, user stories, and so on, find that his or her work has been redescribed. And I mean, anyone who is of a caliber of these guys or ladies don't want to do just swallow something that someone else have get. They always can come up with improvements. But many of these improvements, I have definitely experienced myself. And by the way, I have been such a guru, so I know quite well what I'm talking about. I was a guru in RAP. So they find that their work is basically misunderstood. So instead of collaborating, these people, which they should, because they are brilliant, they start to fight, and fight may be sophisticated. It's not with the hands, it's with words.
Right.
And they don't like one another's work. So they don't support one another. That needs to go away. I call it one of the crazy things, it's called methods war.
Yep. It's almost like, to use a political term, right? A balkanization, right? Everybody goes into their own little identity and then they start shooting barbs at each other via Twitter, via LinkedIn. And it's intellectual cheap shots, right? Because if you think, like, to your point, we're all trying to get to the same place. It's just people need to feel the need to recreate the wheel.
Yep, absolutely. And that is one of them. The other one is what we call get rid of method prisons. Practices like Scrum, user story, and many other practices. These are the simple ones basic ones. And then there are more advanced things that have to do with value creation and advanced architecture practices and so on. These are what now you have to cut because I lost my track here. How did I start here now? These are described in such a way that they are not modular and that they are not reusable. So they sit inside a method. If you want to reuse such a more advanced practice in another method, in your own method, you have to redescribe it because everything is unique about that practice. And the interesting thing is that even if on the surface, these different frameworks look very different, there is a lot of similarities. There is much more than people can see.
Right. If you distill them all down at their kernel, right? They're all basically they're all a means to the same end. It's just put in different wrapping.
Yes. And that is crazy. Practices should be free from any method available to the world. In a way that everybody can go and ask for. I want this practice, I want that practice, wherever they come from. They shouldn't sit in one particular method.
Right. So let me ask you this, Ivor, and let's transition into, let's talk about essence, right? And what you are Let's talk about the idea. Let's talk about the behaviors, and also let's talk about what you're trying to do with this. Because the more I read, and I know we're going to talk about some of your success stories, it just makes good sense. So take it away, Ivor. Like, if you had to describe Essence in a nutshell, how would you describe it?
It's a platform to describe methods and practices. It's a common ground. It's these things that are uncontroversial that we can stand on when we describe our methods and practices. So basically, if people were describing, I would say these gurus, I don't think we need any gurus in the future. We need experts. If the experts describe their practices in a standardized way and focused on what really is essential, that is usually very little of a practice, but it's enough for a newbie to be able to work in a team with others that knew more. So if you focus on the essentials, you have a standard, simple way of describing practices, then you can create the whole world can create an ecosystem where all interesting practices are available. You can pick the practice, a team can then pick the practices they want to use and compose them into a method. So in this world, practices will be what we call first-class citizens. They are the important things. Methods are just compositions of practices. And any team can select the practice that work for them. They don't need to have mm-hmm. a big starter pack, you know, right. and go take training on learning a lot of stuff if they are not mature for it. On the other hand, people who are very competent, they don't need a lot of that kind of stuff, but they have a very good use of the kernel, the essence, because the essence identifies the thing you really need to care about.
Right.
It's a standard, but it still identifies the thing you need to care about, but often are forgotten.
The thing that jumped out at me is, you know, I'm a big fan of domain-driven design. And in domain-driven design, the three concepts they bound you up against is ubiquitous nomenclature. So everybody's speaking the same words, right? Which is what Essence helps to solve. Bounded context, you know where things start and end, which again, this is where Essence comes into play. It lays out the method in a very clear-cut way. And aggregate roots, right? And this is where I really think some of the benefit of Essence is where, like we talked about with the methods prison and all the different frameworks all boil down to the same thing. If you can agree to those aggregate roots, which is what you're documenting via Essence, everybody is, to your point, jumping off from the same, we're all launching from the same, we're all diving off the same diving board, right? We're all going from the same departure state or location. And that makes communication a lot easier.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you also have to remember that Essence is a standard. It means it has gone through a rigorous evaluation. Hundreds of people that are very competent in the method space, not the methodologies, but more scientists, have evaluated it. It has been practiced by many, many people in the world. So it's not a one man's work in any way. I was maybe coordinating work, but I didn't, and I had a vision, but I didn't really do more than little work. Little of this is my creation. We have many other people participate.
And that's one of your points, right, Ivor? This is more like a universal standard. Like when it comes to electrical engineering or any type of the hard sciences, that's really what you're bumping up against is setting a established for the most part, universally agreed upon standard that everybody can then march to, that you know that we're all coloring and that we're all singing from the same hymnal.
Yeah. And that is the fact that it's a standard means it must be uncontroversial. If it didn't fit for any method out there, it wouldn't be good. It needs to be really uncontroversial.
Right. So can we talk, Ivar, if you can share some of the success stories you've had with Essence, like some of the, I don't know how much you can or can't share, but any examples where you've used this to great success that others could maybe look to for some inspiration?
Yeah, but quite many. Let me talk about basically three different audiences. So let's start to talk about the academics. First of all, I have high respect for the academics. Unfortunately, not much that comes out in terms of research is really useful, not much. But there is something coming out. And when both the industry and the academic world go the same way, in the same direction, then that is right, it should happen. So we have really engaged the academic world. We have more than 60 university professors working together. Many of them are very active to create material for teaching full semester classes at university level. We wrote a book together. I wrote together with four or five other people in 2019, that was a book directed for first year students at university level, learning software engineering.
This was the essentials of modern software engineering, Ivar, that one?
Exactly, okay. Yes. And that book, normally software engineering is taught in the third or fourth grade, but this, since Essen is very simple, it can be taught already in the first grade. So that is something we have been working on. There is a huge community of academics that are interested in essence. Now, the other group, which is also very important, is of course that the current methodologist, if I say so, people who have been very successful in building methods, accept and adopt essence. And here we have also got been very successful. Jeff Sutherland, which is one of the fathers of Scrum, basically says essence is the key to success. That's his words, by the way. And he mentions that 50%+ of all Scrum implementations are failures, and essence is key to success. We have also worked with Scott Ambler, who said, basically, I cannot get enough of it. His situation is that he has a huge number of practices, and essence cannot play a strong role with discipline agile until many of these practices are essentialized. We have now about 100 that are essentialized. Then the Spotify model, which is very popular in banking and insurance industry, is also being essentialized. So we are working with one of the founders of a Spotify model to create a Spotify Essentials. It should be available quite soon. And I could mention several other people. Tom Gill, for instance, a very famous software engineer, written lots of books and lots of articles. He is himself a methodologist. He has, as you say, donated his work for essence, to essence, be centralized. And many people work and help us do this on a volunteering basis. They don't make any money, they do it because they love it and think it will be the future. Let's go to the most interesting for you, is the industry. And here we have been working with clients since 10 years before we actually had a standard, used Essence. Munich Re is one of the clients. The latest success story we have that we can talk about is Hapag-Lloyd in a shipping company in Germany.
Okay.
They have used Essence to as a platform to describe their existing methods. They have many methods and they have used it to describe their existing methods. And they are still working on that. There is a case study from Hapag-Lloyd on our website. So it can be found.
Perfect. I will link to that in the show notes.
Yeah.
So one of the things,
a long answer.
One of the things you said, Ivar, that really resonated with me is when we had our initial conversation before we scheduled this, you said what you're trying to do is bridge the gap between learning and doing, which I think is, you know, when you talk about the methods prison and when you talk about, okay, buy this training plan for $49.95 and you're, you know, it's kind of, it's, there's no praxis. It's very much just, here's the theory. Whereas you're trying with the idea of making your practices essential, you're trying to make that leap, not really a leap, more of just a normalized step forward.
Yes, I call this the Achilles heel of methods adoption. And that is the gap between learning and doing, or learning and delivery. We get training. Methodologists give training. You can have all kinds of packages of training, and you become certified. I'm not going to discuss certification, good or bad, but there is a lot behind what you can offer in learning, and you have not only training. You can get you have videos, you have all kinds of material to get competent. But then, now you have learned something and you have to do something, then there is a gap. You scratch your head when you sit there in a project and start to have to do something. And you may get consulting. And consulting, the problem is there are not many really good consultants. They can spell to whatever method they have and maybe a little bit more. But the reality is, this is a scarce resource. We need to bridge that gap and provide support as you work. And since Essence have a way to be actionable, you can actually, in a way, execute practices. You get proposals for what to do. And these proposals can be broken down by the team and the team members into smaller tasks that you actually put in Jira or similar tools.
Okay.
So you actually bridge the gap and get people to both learn more in reality, in practice, and to integrate with normal development tools. So that is, we have worked on a tool in this space for 4 years, made many iterations to get it right. Now we are in a very good shape. We can play games in the tool and so on. It's called TeamSpace, by the way.
Okay.
TeamSpace. And it's the reason I talk about it is because there is nothing similar available. It's a new way of thinking.
Right.
So that's why I think I can talk about it without feeling I do a sage speech.
No, not at all. Not at all. So I do want to talk a little bit about more about TeamSpace. So but before we go into that, Ivar, I want to ask you a question, right? So you're the father of use cases, right? And I remember writing use cases way back in the day, right? Happy path, not happy path, the who, the what, the when, the actors. And it was always for me, the benefit was always the thought exercise that came out of it, right? The forcing yourself to imagine how this path looks. And, you know, in the Agile world, we're married to the idea of user stories, right? With the idea that the three C's come on the back. However, a lot of, like you quoted before, a lot of failed transformations, a lot of unsuccessful adoptions, that those three C's, it really only becomes one C. It's just a card. Do you think we, you know, I'm assuming, if I remember correctly, the intention behind that simple user story was the idea to remove waste, right? Wasteful documentation. However, do you think that maybe we kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater, Ivar, and that we've concentrated so much on that one statement as a blank, I can blank so that I can blank, that we've kind of introduced complexity and introduced more points of failure, which is one of the things that I think Essence is trying to remediate, is putting everything out there. But do you think we kind of cut off our noses to spite our face?
First of all, it's not out yet. It's still in the bathtub. it's getting much more attention now than it had 5 years ago. Because use cases that people know about were, most people, I should say, both the old generation, were the first generation of use cases. But we have learned, you know? Mm-hmm. And user story was a great idea. But beauty is that it so easily can be integrated with use cases. A use case is a set of user stories. You can start when you create, you start thinking about the use cases, and then you have in understanding what the use case is, you identify which user story should I develop. Or you can start with one user stories and build around that other user stories until you get the complete use case. Mm-hmm. And that is what we call use case 2.0. A use case 2.0 is centralized, of course, and it was available in essential unified process, but it's also now a free practice that many companies are using. We don't talk so much about it. Currently our focus is on Essence, but there is no doubt we have lots of clients working with us on adopting use case 2.0. which has everything important that you find in user stories as well. And a concept like epics is still there. It's also there. So we're not only talking about the small user story, the epics. An epics, we call it earlier functional area, but an epics is a set of use cases. And right. Then these are broken down into user stories, and you can go the other way. I want to say one more thing. Use cases are absolutely not in any way in danger of death.
Right.
Look at any product, any area, industrial internet, self-driving cars, big data. You can go on area after area, and you will find on the first page, if you go to the website, which are the use cases that you need to support? The use cases are there and a very right. top level. And then if you want to develop something, you need to formalize it. And that you do by breaking down into user stories and so on.
So And I will link to, I know you have a lot of stuff out there around use cases 2.0. I actually did a lot of the reading myself. I will link to that in the show notes for all of you listeners. So you can dig in. There's a lot of great content there. I do want to talk about TeamSpace. So you mentioned that, right? So this is a platform you've been working on. It's helping to essentialize some practices. Can we talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely.
So I guess we'll start off by what would be the driver for a company or a practice house, even a consulting house? What would be their interest in looking into TeamSpace? Why would you suggest you need this in your life?
Okay, let's look at the big vision to start with. Imagine you have access to all important practices, relevant practices in the world, in an ecosystem. Imagine you can let the team select what practices work for them. Every team can select what works for them, compose them into a method. You don't need to brand a method. You don't need to have a name of a method. It's this team's method. And dependent on the competence of the team, they will have different sets of practices and what they are doing, of course. Imagine that the team gets support in working with, get support while we actually do the job. But these practices are not just in a book or on a website, but they actually are available at the fingertips of the developer. And that these practices actually drive what goes into Jira or other similar tools.
Okay, so it does integrate with some of your product delivery. I'm not going to say software delivery lifecycle. It's project delivery lifecycle, right? So like a Jira, like a Rally, something like that. Okay.
So that is where we are. There are much more to be done. And what we didn't know when we started all this work with Essence, let's say 10 years ago, or even more, I would say 15 years ago, was what value we got by having a standard common ground for all methods. We got a lot of values, for instance, this executability I talked about. And that is a very important feature. And I could go on and describe feature after feature that we didn't have before and couldn't provide. We didn't even know that we wanted. And that is true today too. What we are offering, most people don't even know they want it. It reminds me, if I may say so, when Steve Jobs and Apple came out with the iPhone, and no one knew that we wanted that. No one. They didn't know. I didn't know that I wanted that kind of smartphone. But once I had it in my hand,
you can't go back.
I can't go back. And that is what we feel from talking to clients and so on. There is no way back once we have it.
Okay. So Ivar, I'm going to make this request of you while I have you on the recording. What I would like to do is set up some time to actually do a demo of this to a video. I'd like to work with you, and for our listeners, we will actually link this to the episode and we will link it off of our Discord server. So we will record the screens and Ivar and one of his people can show us how the tool works, because I do think this is really important. Most people in the sound of my voice are agile practitioners who work in a company that has built some sort of quasi playbook, right? Let's take it home. Every company has a playbook and every company writes it differently. And we all know it's a hot labor market right now. People are hopping job to job. And one of the most difficult things when you hop to company A from company A to company B is trying to get your feet below you. And this is where I truly believe in this idea of Essence, because if I know everybody is using the same ubiquitous nomenclature, I can walk in the door, go to their version of TeamSpace, pull up all their essential practices, and very quickly become acclimated to what they do and what maybe the differences are to what I'm used to and company A and what company B is. So I do think this is a great idea that we really want to explore further. So with that being said, Ivar, if people want more information, if they want to get in contact with you, I know you have a LinkedIn group, which we will link to, which talks about the crazy things. Where can they find you? Where should they go?
They are welcome to send emails to me, to my email address.
Okay. And I will put a mail to in the show notes. So once again, we're running out of time here. So I want to thank Ivar once again for taking time to join us from his beautiful location. I want to thank, on behalf of Ivar and myself, I want to thank all of you listeners for tuning in again. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a review, a rating on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, your podcasting platform of choice, as it does help others find us. If you like this conversation, please hop into our Discord server. We have a very vibrant Discord server. We average somewhere between 70 and 80 active posters a day. Just yesterday, we had Johanna Rothman and Chris Merman debating the idea of servant leadership, which was a great conversation. So be sure to find us there. Last but not least, I want to give a shout out to Machine Man Records and Krebs for providing our outro music free of charge. So once again, Ivar, I want to thank you for joining us. I look forward to speaking to you again. And until next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast signing out.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure is all ours.